talk a lot about missing kids and kids from the United States. But today, I want to talk about the children of other countries and some of the exploitation that they face. Hi, guys. This is The Missing Ones. I am Liberty Campbell.
And I am Alexis Peterson.
I love to travel. Do you like to travel?
I do. I'm also a homebody, though, too. So it's like I like going out, but then I also like staying home, too.
I like the new, I like the experience of traveling. Like, I like the new feeling and exciting. So I'm not like super crazy. Like, I like to stay home. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a people person. I would rather stay at home and in my bed. But if the opportunity like presents itself, I'm absolutely going to go. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of the best way to lead into this.
So in like reviewing this case, because I kind of prepped two this time before we recorded this, just listening or like reading over this story reminded me of another story that I heard of from a different podcast. And I can't remember what podcast it was, but it's also based in Mexico, and it's about this mom who like took down the mafia by herself.
I'm gonna have to look that up.
Yeah, so it's based in this town. I can't remember what. I'm really bad. I think it was San Francisco, Mexico. It was something that I was like, oh, I know where that is. And then I was like, wait, no. San Fernando, Mexico.
San Fernando, Mexico. Okay.
Yeah. So it's based in San Fernando, Mexico. And the mafia is so intertwined with everything, like government and everything, that like there's mafia leaders running the government. And so her 20-year-old daughter gets kidnapped. And she tries to go to the police, and they're like, well, there's nothing we can do. And then she tries to keep bringing it up to, like, higher in power. And she goes, like, did you guys take her? You know, talking directly to one
of
the
mafia.
And they're like, no, it wasn't us. It must be, like, this other one. And so she found out it was actually them, and she like gets a fake ID, dyes her hair, dresses up like
the mom does.
The mom does, yeah. What? So the mom, and then tracks each member of the mafia, and like one by one, and I think she brings them to justice. And
female like, John Wick, man.
Yeah. And it was like she was doing it. Darn good job, to the point where like the townspeople were rallying behind her and stuff like that, and it got to the point where they eventually like killed her too, the mom. But she had so much information on like the last few people, or like at least a few more people, that police were able to like use the information she collected to bring those people to justice too.
That's insane. What? Yeah, what's the mom's name?
Her name is Miriam Rodriguez.
Okay, well, we'll definitely have to find that podcast and we'll link it in the description box.
Yeah,
but that's
crazy. I know
crazy.
The New York Times reported on the story and a couple others, but I seriously cannot find the podcast I originally listened to. But we can definitely link the story because it's a crazy one, but it shows like what mom's power can do. And like, you know, she took it. Nobody else wanted to like help her. She took them down herself.
That had to be so frustrating for her. Like, there's nothing in this world I wouldn't do for Scarlett. So,
yeah.
That had to be incredibly frustrating. The reason I brought up traveling earlier is because I was going to ask if you had been out of the country. And then I remember that you guys went to Mexico on your honeymoon. But besides there, have you been anywhere else?
Not really. I mean, I've been to like Hawaii, but that's still like in the country. It's the
United States, yeah.
We were close to getting to Canada. We were just on the border, but you know, quarantine that we couldn't cross.
Quarantine. I'm so tired of COVID. So tired of it.
I just think it's funny, like all the children who are being born during the quarantine are getting referred to as children of the corn.
That's amazing. That low-key makes me want to have a baby. Generation of the corn. Oh my god, that's what they're gonna be called. That's not okay. That's what they're gonna be called, is generation of the corn. So that's good. Oh dear. The only place out of the country that I have been is China. And that was in like, that was in 2008, right before the Summer Olympics. And we went to Beijing and Shanghai, and then another city, I think it was called Guangzhou, but I am not 100% sure. I just know we had to take a really long bus ride. And it was miserable. Those buses are miserable.
I can only imagine.
Like, they were nice because they, like, were for tourists and stuff, but they had, like, a bathroom in the back of them that if anyone used to go number two, or even number one, it would... Hi. Can you tell I have a toddler? Number one, number two. Anyways, it stunk so bad. The whole bus would stink so bad if someone used the bathroom, and it was horrible. But in China, or at least in Beijing, I can't remember how it was in Shanghai, you had to pay to use the restroom.
Oh, I've heard that.
Yeah, you couldn't like just go into the restroom.
I think it's other places too. I want to say it's also in like Scotland, but I can't remember. I
what we thought was funny, and I'll have to see if I can find the picture, is that they would rate their bathrooms like via stars. So like one star would be like a dirty, nasty bathroom. And then five stars is like a great, I don't know. It was just weird. We have a picture of a bathroom with a rating on it. The other thing I thought was super weird, which it's only weird because in the United States, we have like the seat toilets, but the toilets there they're not even toilets. It's literally like a porcelain hole in the ground. So you just squat and do your business, and then it flushes away. So that was interesting as a 12-year-old girl. That was terrifying. And the doors, like, weren't quite long enough in some places, so you just held it until you found somewhere where it was.
I'm a nervous, like, bathroomer, and so...
Have you ever noticed how wide the cracks are in the, like, doors in public bathrooms?
I try not to think about it.
Why is that? Other countries, it's not like that. So, like...
I don't know.
Is America just full of a bunch of pervs?
Yes.
That's like, why personally, we're here today. I don't... you're not wrong. I personally don't, like, look in there. But if you're just walking by... My 2-year-old is very curious about who is behind that door. So, if you are a victim of my peeping Tom 2-year-old, I'm sorry. I'm trying.
Okay. Are you going to keep all this bathroom?
You know, I was thinking I might, actually. We're going to find out. It depends on how I feel when I actually get around to editing this.
Because we'll I don't think they want to hear about bathrooms and how we pee. I don't think anybody wants to hear that.
Welcome to the podcast about bathrooms around the world. Anyways, moving on with our lives. But I loved it there. Like, I want to go back to China. I think it'll be really cool to go back as an adult and explore. But we're going to talk more about foreign countries and that stuff later. Before we really get into this episode, I want to remind you guys to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. So that's neat. We're still figuring out this whole social media thing. Neither one of us are very good at it, but it's okay. And if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, we are going to ask you to please leave a review, a 5-star review, preferably. you can tell us you like monkeys. It doesn't matter. As long as you leave a 5-star review, it will help us get seen by more people. Or the more people that listen to this podcast means the more people that know about these kids' stories and can potentially bring them home.
And just a quick disclaimer, this episode will talk about child abuse, and we ask that if you are triggered or sensitive to things like that, we encourage you to proceed with caution.
When I look for cases to cover, I try really hard to be diverse, but it's not always easy to find cases with enough information to share. So I would just end up sitting here telling you guys a long list of names and places where these kids went missing from. There would be no real story to tell. I personally like to hear the stories. I like to know who I'm talking about. I like to know about their family, how they went missing, what may or may not have happened to them. So I want to know the details. I'm thinking that our listeners also want to know the details. I could be totally wrong, but that's the point of a podcast, is to share the stories, and that's why I do what I do. So today I'm going to tell you guys about kids from all over the world. Today's episode starts with the abduction of a 3-year-old little boy named Dylan Perez on June 30th of 2020. He and his mom were at a local market in the city of San Cristobal de las Casas. I hope I'm saying that right. I'm sorry if I'm not. This is where Dylan's mom worked, and Juanita asked Dylan and his sibling to go over to their grandmother's table where she was working. And this is when two young children walked up to Dylan and convinced him to go with them. And not long after this, these kids show up again on surveillance cameras without Dylan.
That's super weird. My question is that if the two, Dylan and his sibling, were together, why didn't they leave together with the two children? Were they specifically targeting Dylan? Or, what was the reason why didn't they go, both of them together, if they were right there?
So it looks like Dylan was the specific target. And you'll find out why here in a little bit. There's also conflicting reports about whether or not he was with a sibling. I've read a couple of different things, but I'm sticking with that he was with a sibling because it was the most consistent thing. It was originally thought that the children were being used to abduct other children for a human trafficking operation. In fact, the search for Dylan led to the discovery of 23 other children that were being used to sell trinkets and stuff to tourists, which is what I'm going to talk about here in a few minutes. But when Dylan was not among these kids, his mom made a huge storm. She was determined to get her baby back. She actually went to the capital in Mexico City and wanted to draw attention to her case. She actually almost stopped the vice president's daily briefing with her protest outside the Capitol. It was that intense. According to ABC News, Dylan's dad had immigrated to California to find work while leaving Juanita and their two kids in Mexico by themselves. At this point, she felt like she had nothing and she was so ready for something to be done, and she was not going to be silenced. It was not okay.
The moms just know how to get things done. We got one mom who can take down the mafia, and this mom, I believe, can do much with her voice.
I firmly believe that woman that took down the mafia is the female version of John Wick, but that's just me. But I agree, absolutely. So after her attempt to draw attention in Mexico City, authorities turned back to the security cameras from the market. In those videos, they found a woman talking to the two children that led Dylan away. They identified her at the time as Ophelia and offered a $13,500 reward for any information leading to her or Dylan. Through more investigation that hasn't been clearly reported, they later discovered that the woman was a 23-year-old woman named Margarita. That's all the information they give about her. I guess it's some sort of policy in Mexico to keep names and images of the person who committed the crime private. And like every picture I've seen of her, she's her eyes are blocked out. So like you can see her body, but her eyes have like a big black rectangle over them.
That's weird, because you would think that they would want, like, if they're going to release that information, might as well just, release everything. Or at least, if they're going to give that little bit, because someone who knows her might say something or at least submit an anonymous tip.
Well, so they did. I think it's part of a way to kind of protect her because at this point they knew where she was and like who she was, but for some reason they don't give her last name. And I think that's I think that's a way to protect her because here in America it's different. I mean, they have zero problem giving you all of the information for whatever criminal, but it looks like it's a policy to keep the names private. Everything that I read said that she took the boy because her and her boyfriend had broken up after they were unable to conceive a child. Her thought process was if she could get a child, he would want her back. And I'm telling you, honey, it's not worth it. It's not worth it, all right? I'm just saying. According to ABC News, this was a well-thought-out plan, and she had been waiting at the market for a few days. Like looking and watching for the perfect chance. And I guess she had been watching Dylan and his mom for a couple of days, but she knew that she wouldn't be able to like walk up to him and then carry him out of there. So she paid the two children we see in the surveillance videos to take Dylan. I guess she paid him something like 200 pesos, which is about $10, to lead him away. And she had even convinced them that she was Dylan's real mom.
That's so crazy. So, I don't know, what would the thought process be? Because, okay, so even if he wanted a child, you're gonna be like, hey, look at who I got. Like, are you gonna come up with a weird story that it's like, oh, I just adopted this child for us? Because he's not that young. Does it say how young he was?
He's three. He was three when he
Okay.
was taken.
That's
And
sweet.
well, and infertility is really hard. I'm gonna really quickly add a trigger warning here. I'm gonna talk about infertility. If you struggle with this and you don't want to listen, this is the time to skip ahead a little bit. But infertility is something that a lot of women face each year, and it's absolutely heartbreaking. So I think that she probably was just so desperate that anything at this point would help. And I mean, it's also very likely that she was in some kind of abusive relationship with this guy. And I mean, we obviously don't know the whole story. So whether or not she was actually battling infertility or she just for some weird reason wanted a kid with this guy but couldn't get one, it's hard to say. Like it's I don't know because all I can say is that if it was because she was struggling with infertility, that she probably wasn't in her right mind. I think that it's something that nobody really talks about, that when you struggle with infertility, you get really depressed, and when you get really depressed, you kind of lose your mind a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of what it was. If her story about not being able to conceive a child and wanting her own or wanting her boyfriend back because of that is true, and that's why she took Dylan, I think that she just wasn't in her right mind and didn't really think about how she would introduce this 3-year-old to this guy.
Makes sense.
After taking the boy, she stayed in a nearby hotel for a couple of nights and then took him home to the city of Sintalapa, 2 hours west of where Dylan went missing from. I am happy to report that Dylan was found safe. He was well taken care of, fed, and seemingly unharmed. He was happy to be reunited with his mom and the rest of his family. And according to Mexican authorities, the woman known as Margarita is now facing up to 75 years in prison.
Yay, happy ending. I feel
Right?
like that sounds super long.
I do too.
But
And like in a perfect world, instead of sending her to prison, they would get her the mental help that she obviously needs. But it's not a perfect world, and we can't do anything about it. I mean, she did take somebody's kid. Like, she definitely deserves to be punished. Like, that's wrong.
Yeah,
Please do not take
absolutely.
children. If you are struggling with infertility, talk to someone. Please get some help. And I say that with like absolute sincerity. I do not mean this in like a joking tone, but I think that she needs help. But 75 years is a really long time.
Yeah, because I feel like there's been a lot of people who have done a lot worse who get off a lot easier.
Especially in Mexico. I will
Well,
agree with
even
you.
here in America, too.
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. Dylan's case is so important because it led authorities to those 23 other children who were being used in a human trafficking ring. The search for Dylan led authorities to a house in San Cristobal de las Casas, where the abducted children were being forced to live in horrible conditions. They were forced to sell trinkets and stuff to tourists in the streets of the popular tourist town. The children found in the home were mostly between the ages of 2 and 15, but Associated Press reported that there were at least three infants in the home between the ages of 3 months to 20 months. The state prosecutor said that the children were forced to return with a certain minimum amount of money for the right to get food and a place to sleep in the home. San Cristobal is a beautiful and popular tourist trap. And like many of those kinds of cities, it isn't unusual to see adults and children selling things in popular areas. They sell things that they say are handmade or specialty items, but in reality, they're bought dirt cheap in wholesale. It makes me think about when we were in New York City and my mom like went out by herself for a little while and she came back with this bag. She was telling us about how she saw it in a shop and like stopped and asked them about it. And the guy was like, "Yes, my sister who is in Nepal hand makes them. She's even on the phone right now. Would you like to talk to her?" So my mom talked to some random woman who told her she was in Nepal and that my mom thought she had this like genuinely handmade bag. And for a minute, I was like, that's super cool. And then I finally admitted to her that I had seen the exact same bag back home at a gas station.
Like buying knockoffs. You know, I have two makeup palettes that I was so excited to be getting, and I didn't buy it from the original site because I was like, oh, this has a good deal, and you know, not thinking much of it. And they're total fakes, and it's very apparent.
That sucks. Well, it also makes me think of the guys in New York that they were dressed as monks. Whether or not they were really monks, I don't know. But they would walk up to you and offer you a bracelet. And my mom bought one, and she comes back to us and she says, I just bought inner peace for $10. And we were like, what? And I guess it's like some way for them to like get money out of tourists to sell them it was like they were like little beads. It was like a beaded bracelet and she paid $10 for it and apparently got inner peace. It was super funny, like no harm done, whatever. I just think it's funny. Basically, the point of my story is that this bag that my mom supposedly or that my mom bought in New York that was supposedly from Nepal was in reality just a big wholesale item. So it's really common for these people selling stuff on the street to use the same supplier, I guess. Anyways, these kids were forced through physical and psychological violence to sell this crap to tourists, and they were malnourished and neglected in every way possible. And as far as I can tell, three women have been detained and may face trafficking and forced labor charges in this specific case.
That's so awful. I can't imagine the therapy these kids are gonna need when they grow up after like going through this.
I'm willing to bet they won't receive it. There wasn't any detail about the kids or like if they were reunited with their family or if they were orphans, but unfortunately, I don't think they'll receive it. When I found this article about Dylan and them finding the 23 abducted children, it really got me thinking. And so I wanted to talk about the kids in foreign countries who sell these trinkets and beg tourists for money, because they might not all be abducted children, but they are most certainly being exploited. In a perfect world, all children would go to school, learn, play, have full bellies, and warm beds. But unfortunately, the world is a horrible and sad place for so many children. It hurts my heart so much. Like, I can't. I'm gonna cry. It's fine. We're gonna move on from this. This feels like such a double-edged sword. On one side, you want to help them and make sure that they get fed for the week by buying this cheap trinket. But on the other hand, you don't want to contribute to the problem. I mean, some of these children aren't even selling things. They are just plain and simple begging for money. When we were in China, I will never ever forget seeing a little boy. He was laying on a dirty blanket next to his mom, and he was an infant. He was probably 10 months old. And it was very clear to me that he had been born with some type of defect. His head was long and it was swollen and his eyes were sunken in, but yet they were like popping out at the same time, which I know sounds weird, but it's the only way I can describe it. And I remember thinking, as a super privileged 12-year-old little girl from America, about how that little boy was going to get the care that I knew that he needed. And I felt so horrible as a 12-year-old little girl in this foreign world, seeing this tiny little dirty boy laying on a dirty blanket. And just thinking about it makes my heart hurt. I can see him clear as day, like clear as day.
Well, is there any way to help without like contributing to the problem? Like, instead of giving money, could you give like that specific individual kid food or like something like that?
Probably. I never really thought about that. You probably could give the individual child food, but it's also possible that they will turn it away, because in most cases, actually, they are required to come back with a minimum amount every day. And so it's possible that they'll say, no, I'd rather have the money. Not a lot of traveling is happening right now, at least it shouldn't be. But when it does start up again, the problem is going to be 10 times worse, I guarantee it. In a 2013 article by Gillian Keenan on Slate.com, she talks about her experience in New Delhi, where a boy with no legs begged her for money. She handed him $10 out of pity and then went on her way. She goes on to talk about how the candy that you give these children can be dangerous because they don't have access to dental care. And she also talks about how giving these children and the beggars money really isn't helping them, and it's actually hurting them. By giving these children money and trinkets that they can resell, we are virtually paying for them to be trafficked and exploited. And the people behind it know that, and they know that these dirty children in the streets will tug at your heartstrings and that you will give them a little bit of change that you have. Dylan's case led to a trafficking ring in Mexico, but that is not even a drop in the bucket. Children and adults are kidnapped around the world and are forced to work as beggars for organized criminal groups. Like the kids in Mexico, they are treated horribly. They do not get to keep the money they're bringing in, and despite the fact that they can provide food for their victims, they don't. The more sickly and malnourished a child is, the more likely you are to give them your spare change. In my research for this episode, I came across a study that was conducted in Albania, Greece, and Senegal by an organization called Anti-Slavery International. It looks like it was from 2009, so it is a little bit out of date, but I think that the information is still valid and still reliable. They went really in depth in this study. I will link this study in the blog if you would like to read all 38 pages, but I'm just going to kind of summarize it for you. They interviewed children, parents, schools, and even the third-party people who are known for exploiting these children. The evidence shows that children may be forced to beg by their guardians, but others are exploited by third parties like traffickers, criminal organizations like mobs and gangs. And in West Africa, children are forced to beg by Quranic schools.
What are Quranic schools? I've never heard of that.
So from what I can tell, Quranic schools are informal schools that are normally based on religion in Senegal. They're really informal. And from what I can tell, they are really well known for forcing the children they teach to beg in the streets. They require the kids to beg for money in order to get food and basic human needs. The parents send their children there thinking that they're going to get an education, but in reality, they're living in deplorable conditions. And it's not like a few hundred kids. This school has over 100,000 young kids working for them, according to a different study from 2018. The same study from 2018 reports that there were 16 children killed by these teachers from abuse and neglect. No matter who it is that is exploiting these children, they are at risk for being beaten on top of not getting fed, not having a warm place to sleep. These kids also encounter abuse by the tourist, and of course, they don't get any real kind of education. I also want to add that along with being forced to beg, there's a percentage of them that are addicted to drugs, and that is part of why they're begging, is to fuel that addiction.
So how do these kids get into this situation? How do they come to sell crappy souvenirs and beg for money?
That's just it. It's different for every part of the world. In some places like Mexico and many others, the kids are abducted, and especially the younger children, they can sometimes be sold by their parents because they're just that poor. And kids, especially young ones, can be seen as a burden on parents, and it's an easy way to relieve some stress on their lives. On one hand, children, like I said, can be seen as a burden, and because of their vulnerability, it can cause people to feel charitable towards them. And on the other hand, parents want to do what is best for their children. And even though making them beg isn't ideal, it is a way to provide for them and the rest of the family. And poverty is another major reason these kids beg. Their parents are already stretched as thin as they can go. And in these countries, getting out of poverty is next to impossible. It's something these kids inherit. In some places, ethnicity plays a major role. I mean, it's really just one thing after another. In most places like India and Albania, the police are part of the problem. If they aren't harassing the kids, they're hauling them off to jail. And in some cases, it's been reported that kids bribe the police to avoid like prison and jail. And of course, stories of police beating these children are not unheard of.
So what can be done? Should we give them money or should we just ignore them while traveling?
Well, according to the study from 2009 that I mentioned before, access to good quality education would go a really long ways towards ending it by providing a type of escape. As for if you should or should not give them money, it's probably best that you avoid it. So before traveling to these places where mobs and gangs run everything, including the authorities, it's important to do some research and to know that by giving money or even the pen out of your purse to these kids, you're not helping them. You are helping those that are exploiting them. There is absolutely nothing wrong with wanting to share our blessings with those that are less fortunate. If you want to help, consider donating to a non-governmental charitable organization like Free the Slaves and we.org. It doesn't feel as warm and fuzzy as seeing that child smile, but I promise by donating to an actual organization, it's going to go a lot further than the change you handed them in the street. And I will also have the links to those organizations in the description box of this episode, as well as on our blog. I love to travel, and I remember being in China and seeing all of the people begging, and I wasn't very old. I was 12, and I remember thinking, like, these people are super annoying. And then we mocked some of them, which I feel really horrible about now. So hard to not give to them. You want so badly to help, but it's really important to understand that, like, it's not actually helping. What you're doing is aiding the person that's exploiting them. So while finding cases to do, I come across a lot of kids who there is little to no information about them or their disappearance. So we want to go ahead and highlight one of those kids every week. So Alexis is going to give you their name, their date of birth, a little bit about them and like their appearance, when they went missing and where they went missing from. And if you would just keep an eye out for these kids, I think that it would really do a lot of good.
Okay, so our first girl, her name is Alexis S. Patterson. She was born April 4th of 1995 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. She was last seen wearing a red hooded jacket with a gray stripe on the sleeves, a purple shirt, light colored blue jeans, white Nike tennis shoes. She wore her hair in two braids pulled back into one ponytail and was carrying a pink Barbie book bag. Alexis Patterson was reported missing by her mother on Friday, May 3rd, 2002. Patterson was last seen in the area of High Mount School located at 4921 West Garfield Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin at approximately 8 a.m. She was reportedly dropped off by her stepfather. She is a African-American female with brown eyes. She was 3 feet 8 inches tall and weighed about 42 pounds. If you have any information concerning her, please contact your local FBI office or the nearest American embassy or consulate.
Well, hopefully someone recognizes the name or the area, and hopefully we can get her home. She's been gone for a long time.
All of our sources can be found at themissingonespodcast.wordpress.com, and links to the organizations mentioned in today's episode will be in the description box. The best way we can help is by being aware, talking about it, spreading facts over fiction, and knowing about the places you are going.
I unfortunately don't think that this is something that can be completely solved, not unless poverty and world hunger goes away overnight. It's a shitty world, folks, and all we can do is try and make it better, be kind, do the right thing, and tell the truth. Remember, see something, say something. Thanks, guys, for listening. This was hard to talk about and hard to do research on because it is something that affects millions of children and adults every year all over the world. Remember to follow us over on Instagram, Twitter, and now TikTok at Missing Ones Pod. You can also join us over on Facebook in our new discussion group. Just search the Missing Ones discussion group and hit join. We want to be a space for people to come and talk about the cases we talk about other missing kids, and any other true crime that really interests you. And of course, most importantly, make sure that you are sharing us with your friends and family. I hope you all have a wonderful week.
Bye.